Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Open Paddock Podcast, the 98th episode of this great show. Joining me this week, I have Mike back from sabbatical.
Good evening, everyone.
And we have no Doug. Doug is on assignment, and by on assignment, I mean lazily sitting someplace. Enjoying time.
Cursing his internet connection, it sounds like.
Yes, yes. Not enough bandwidth, man.
Well, you know, when he devotes most of his processor space and bandwidth to the search for extraterrestrial intelligence, you know, these things are bound to happen.
Indeed. There's only so much bandwidth to go around, and when you're searching for aliens...
And I'm sure Doug's into harvesting bitcoins as well, so...
Nice. Let's see. Not a whole lot going on outside of the topics we usually cover. NASCAR is going to the Brickyard, and nobody cares because that race sucks. And they're not going to have a lot of fans. So if they had a lot of fans, they wouldn't try to lure people in with Grand Am racing next year. So, non-topic.
and robbing an actually interesting race from IRP to put it at IMS and be one of the most boring races you've ever seen. Thank you.
Yeah, that's going to be a...
Nothing like robbing Nationwide from IRP. That is probably, you know, every time I've heard anybody talk about the race weekend in Indianapolis for Brickyard and so on, nobody says, if they've gone to IRP, they have no desire to go back to IMS for the race. Seriously, it's a good show. Both the trucks and the Busch or Nationwide cars are a good show out there. And then you go to IMS and it's not.
It happens. That track, Indianapolis is built for one thing.
Yeah,
and
indeed.
One thing only. Unfortunately, they have a bunch of other craziness going on, but you know what? That's okay. Because I'm just fine. I'm just fine watching it the way it is. So, that is what it is. But we do have, we had Casey Kane has left the building. What was that all about?
Oh, I just thought it was interesting. Casey Kane entered a World of Outlaws car, and where was it at? Williams Grove Speedway in Pennsylvania. Threw it off the track, over the guardrail, out of the park, flipping the whole way in the way that sprint cars are prone to do. Big old mess. He was fine, but it was kind of interesting to see. The massive mess that occurred.
Yes, yes, it was. I watched the video on the speed, and it was not so good.
Yeah, well, the only reason I really like to bring that kind of stuff up is it's great to see these guys when they are multifaceted, when they're not just sitting on their butt doing their one discipline and sticking to it. Casey Kane gets out there and runs sprint cars. He's owned. Wing sprint cars. He's owned non-wing sprint cars. He's had teams in both, and he's ran in both. And it's good to see going back to his roots, back to the USAC days. So, pretty cool.
Interesting. Well, let's see. Well, I guess we can move on with the show.
Let's do that.
I think that's all we have.
The show scheduled for tonight consists of we're going to kick it off with rally a little bit there. Sean probably has some more things to elaborate on the schedule.
Not really.
Okay, then we're going to move into F1, and then we're going to move into IndyCar, which will comprise the bulk of the show. So skip as you see fit.
All right. Well, 3, 2, 1, go. Okay, so we'll talk about rally, mainly just WRC stuff to cover today, a couple other things. First, though, Monte Carlo has finally shown us their hand, if you will, and we'll now see what we're going to be getting this January when we get the Monte Carlo rally back. Jeez, brain fart there. Sorry about that. So starting Wednesday, January 18th, we begin with four stages. We've got a couple services sprinkled in. And then Thursday is going to be another bulky day with six stages all together with two services. Friday gets even worse because we've got 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 stages. So a lot of miles to be covered there. And then, last but not least, on Sunday we'll have our power stage on the 18th stage of the rally. So that will be a 3.2-mile test for the drivers. So very interested to see how that's going to play out. Definitely kind of plays into Jean Todt's "We Need More Adventure" rallies, because that's kind of a, you know, 4-day weekend with quite a few stages in there.
Yeah, that's sprinkled in. 270 miles of competitive stages, a total of 1,102 miles of transit.
Lots of transit.
Yeah, when you you know when you're driving the car and somebody's hanging out the window trying to keep the flat from tearing up the fender and all that kind of stuff. All that cool stuff that happens in WRC.
Yes, just don't speed, because that's a lot of stage. You know, non-stage time where you can be dunked for speeding.
Well, you know, unless, of course, you want to, you know, do some funky team order things. I mean, I'm sure that's one way to... anyway.
Shouldn't have to worry about that on tarmac, hopefully. So, depends on how much snow we have, I suppose.
We've also heard that they're going to mount the high beams for a couple of stages for this rally, so that'll be interesting to see them getting back into the night stages.
I can't wait. I love the high beams. I love the light pods on those cars.
Mm-hmm.
So that'll be a blast, and we'll have Ford, Citroen, and Mini battling it out. It'll be kind of a historic bit for Mini, as they they've been traditionally Monte Carlo. You know, when you think Monte Carlo at the very beginning of the WRC, you always think of the little minis tooling around. Now we're going to have big minis tooling around, and they're not so friendly. They're very powerful and mean minis. Not so mini.
Not so mini minis.
Yes, yes.
Very nice.
So I look forward to that. Again, the IRC and the WRC mixture should be interesting. So obviously, the WRC cars will be much more powerful, but, you know, it'll just be fun to see. So, that is for sure. And we also have news regarding Ken Block, as the X Games are upon us. We now prepare for the X Games rally. Hopefully this year the stage is something that people can negotiate. And then we also have the Rally Cross segment, all which promised to be awesome this year. But Ken Block has come out with a new hybrid... it's a hybrid function Hoon vehicle.
Okay.
Which I could see this leading to a really bad Hot Wheels commercial TV show.
First thing we have to note, it is not a hybrid drivetrain or anything like that. This is hybrid, meaning that it can do more than one style of racing.
Yes. The car is based off of a 2-liter. It's based off of the Fiesta WRC with a 2-liter turbocharged engine, which I don't get how that works, because you're not going to be able to use it in stage rally unless you take it here to the States. You also have just minor suspension adjustments and tire adjustments take it from stage rally to the Gymkhana, or from Gymkhana to Rallycross, or Rallycross to just pure hooning all over the place. So the livery on the car looks really cool. As it's different, it's got a white front end, which is not typical for the Fiesta, especially Ken Block, usually an all black livery. But the front of it's white with a black black hood. The same green accents are there, and then it's just black. It's black paint dripping instead of white paint dripping.
Just a lot more white this time instead of black.
I think it looks better.
Yeah, it's a sharp car.
Yeah.
For Ken, though, let's be honest. I mean, really, it doesn't matter if the car is suited particularly to the style of racing he's in. He's going to flip it anyway.
Very true. Something bad will happen. But they've basically taken the WRC Focus engine and tuned it and put it in this thing. So it'll be interesting to see. It's going to make its debut at the X Games, X Games 17, which happens this weekend. Really looking forward to that. That's going to be awesome. Mm. I've got the DVR set, so just in case I miss something.
Thank you for the reminder.
Yes.
That is going on my list of things to do. In fact, I may just take care of that with my Dish Network app.
Oh, well, look at you. Where the hell have you come from with all this technology all of a sudden? You're not supposed to know that stuff. But if you see the picture that they have on the Edmunds Inside Line, is where we've taken the article. There's also a video on YouTube of it. But if you look at it, it's really sick because the front of it, it just looks like a test bed car. There's cameras plastered all over every square inch of the front of that. They've got one on the window, one on the hood, one on the bumper, one on the little shrouding on the front where it says Hoonigan. I mean, it's just a really sick looking car. I can't wait to see it. So hopefully I'm hoping for a Kim Block win in the X Games, but I'm also realistic. So
yeah,
nah, it is what it is. Hopefully we'll be able to download that livery on Dirt 3. So which I've neglected. So
yeah, you too.
Yeah, I've neglected it, unfortunately. I'm doing well. I'm making my way up to completing all the achievements on the hardest difficulty. I will not settle for anything less.
Wow. Yeah, you're hardcore.
There's a lot of pressure on me, you know, the rally rider guy kind of thing, you know, always say that I can do rally. Well, I need to be able to do it on the hardest level, even though I'm using a gamepad instead of a steering wheel.
Well, that's cool.
And finally, in the rally realm, we have Finland coming up. Finland is finally this weekend, much like the I don't want to call it the Indy 500 of rally, but it's kind of been the Indy 500 of the rally world since we lost Monte Carlo. Basically, it's the most what do you want to call it? I don't know. Most recognizable. It's a high speed, lots of crests, lots of jumps, and it's one that scares people.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, you think that you can go flat out and then you hit a jump and the road falls away and goes to the right after the jump. If you don't prepare for that, you're going straight off into the trees. Or as Mikko Hirvonen found out last year, you're going to hit the front end on the side of a rock face and go flying up the road doing barrel rolls the whole way. So, yeah, rather heavy crash for the boy last year. But, you know, should be interesting. Ford back on gravel, they need something. They need anything. Because right now, Citroën is kicking their ass up and down every stage that they even touch.
Yeah, Loeb said this week he's not really going to push hard this weekend. He's just going to sit back and gain points.
Which is what he says every time before he goes out and wins the rally.
Yeah, indeed. So take that for what it is.
Yeah, but definitely for him, he knows that Hirvonen and Latvala will be the favorites going into it. And I think it'll be an interesting. I think it'll be an interesting rally. I'm gonna have to go with Jari Matti winning overall. I think. I think he's. He got it down. This rally suits him because it's fast and you have to be fearless. And we know that he's fearless and we know that he's really fast. It's just a matter of the Ford staying together for him. So hopefully it does stay together because, you know, other than that, I don't think Mikko's going to take it. And if none of them take it, then they're going to be in real trouble come the championship.
Well, I think you're wrong, good sir. I think after Jari Matti rolls down the hill...
Nice.
It'll be Hirvonen.
Oh, okay. So at least we both agree on the Ford winning.
Yeah, I think you said it right. They're back on gravel. They're going to push like crazy just to get a win. And yeah, this is going to mean a lot to them because the way their season's going, this may be all they have left.
Yeah, it's the home event for the two drivers. So they're going to need to push all out because we're about to start hitting the tarmac stages. And once that happens, well... We know what happens. They become non-issues.
And Schumacher wins with a 45-second lead.
So, yes, it's going to be the gravel, last real good gravel shot they have, and they're going to need to push out because Citroën will, you know, like you said, 45-second domination of the tarmac. So, it happens. It happens every year. Why should I be led to believe it's going to be any different this year?
Yeah.
So, all right. Well, that's all we really have for rally. Not a whole lot. Just wanted to keep everybody up to date on just a couple things happening, as well as Finland, because we all get very excited for Finland. It's kind of, I know what it is. It's like the spa of WRC. Speaking of spa, let's head right into the segue.
Nice. Welcome to Formula One.
Yes. And welcome to the Hockenheim Grand Prix. This was... Or not Hockenheim. Jesus.
Nürburgring.
You are fired.
Wow.
You are
me. Fire me.
Oh, Jesus. All right, so not Hockenheim. That's all right. I made that mistake 2 years ago when the website was just fledgling, getting started. I, as well, said that they were going to Hockenheim, but they are, in fact, going to Nürburgring. Not my finest moment.
It's hard to keep it straight when they're doing these things.
The rotational calendar.
Yeah, they're not doing that with Germany anymore, I don't believe. I think Nürburgring is the final home for it, but maybe I'm totally wrong. Who knows? It changes year to year. They're already talking about doing, you know, that France is going to come back on, and they're going to trade with Spa.
No.
Crap. Please, don't do that.
Yeah. No, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, not going to happen.
And there's, before we jump into Nürburgring, there is also some talk about a Mexico City race.
Ooh, that's interesting.
They're thinking that they want to hit the North American time zone hard, and by putting four races in the North American time zone, that will be enabling all us North Americans to watch it at a decent hour.
Cater to us.
Yeah, exactly. Well, yeah. Cater to us, because we don't give a crap about your sport.
Yeah, right. True.
It's unfortunate, but it's the fact, you know. I mean, Formula One has no foothold in America. They're on a niche television network. They play it on Fox. I never see what the ratings are for the Formula One races on Fox. I'd be interested to hear what those actually are. But.
Well, I actually had my boss walk up to me today, and he said, "Did you watch the race on Fox?" I was like, "Formula One?" He's like, "Yeah." He's like, "Those cars are rockets." I was like, "Oh my god!" My boss is talking about F1. I was like, "This is a free excuse for me to mess about for a few minutes." Well, let's get into the race. It was Nürburgring. It was Play's home race to six drivers on the grid, most notably, obviously, Sebastian Vettel. After winning the 2010 championship, is looking to win in Germany. And as Bob Varsha always says, before you race, you must qualify. And that's exactly what we did. And for the first time this year, Sebastian Vettel was not on the front row, so not off to a kicking start for the German on his home stint. Usually first, to be honest, but on the off chance he's not, he's always been second. And he was starting third this time behind teammate Mark Webber, who started first place with Lewis Hamilton and his always, we're not very competitive, McLaren Mercedes starting second. You know, I'm getting tired of that.
Wasn't that all week leading up to the event, it was just whinging and moaning and complaining about how, you know, we just won't have the pace of everybody else. The changes aren't enough. We're not going to do very well.
Yeah. Shut your pie hole. So Hamilton would start P2, Vettel P3, Alonso P4. So it's shaping up to be a great fight between all three of the big three, I guess you got to call them now, with the Red Bull and the McLaren and the Ferraris. Other notable qualification failures: Nick Heidfeld not getting out of Q2, which Mr. Eric Bouillet had something to say about that. A.K.A. you suck. You're not doing anything for us this year that we asked you to do.
Nice.
So patience is wearing very thin with Mr. Heidfeld at Renault. Schumacher 10th. What was really interesting was the really good turnout of German drivers in their own qualifying session, because you had Vettel P3, Rosberg P6, Sutil, wherever the hell he came from, at P8, Schumacher P9, and then, of course, we mentioned Heidfeld P11 and Timo Glock P20, which I guess is as good as it's going to get if you're in a virgin Cosworth. So, yes. You know, it was kind of a good showing for the Germans at the Nürburgring. Other notable, one that was kind of surprising was Paul de Resta, P12 in his Force India Mercedes. Kind of interesting because they hit it on a few times during the broadcast. De Resta knows the track from his days at the German Touring Car Championship, so, you know, he knows how to get around there. I don't know if it was just the car just wasn't that capable, or, I mean, it is a Force India, but, you know, Sutil was up there. Come on now. I mean, you know, you were in effect half a second off of your teammate. So, and you've been dominating Sutil all year. I mean, the guy went to China and stabbed somebody. I mean, the guy is
Or
the guy
something
is
like that,
yeah, or,
allegedly.
yeah, allegedly. The guy is next to the closest thing to a murderer on the grid, and he beat you. So,
Nice.
I felt bad because I like Paul d'Arrest a lot. I really hope he finds his way over to the Mercedes machine. He will be my favorite driver once Schumacher retires. I'm
Maybe
calling it now.
he'll send some of that thug street cred of his over to Lewis Hamilton's Twitter feed,
Well,
Joe.
I think he's just been hanging out with Lewis Hamilton too long.
That must be it.
He's like, "Yo, dog, I took a talk the talk, but I'm gonna walk the walk." He's like, "Get shanked." He's like, "Dude, you just shanked the Renault like lead engineer." Oh crap.
Jeez.
Not only are you an
Funny.
idiot in a terrible car, but now you're never there's no room for career progression anymore. Nobody's gonna hire you. You try to shank somebody or hit him in the face with a champagne bottle. What the hell's wrong with you, Sutil? Anyways, so
As the grid turns.
I'm just now picturing in my head like Sutil walking up to some dude in a Lotus Renault jacket and just like shanking him right there.
Just slide the shiv out from underneath his arm and
Slides out. It's like,
keeps walking,
he's like,
drops the shiv, goes to the bathroom.
I'll teach you to make fun of my Virgin Cosworth or
Nice.
my Force India. Sorry, I was thinking of Timo Glock 2 for some reason. Let's move on.
Anyway.
But the problem with Nürburgring, not really a problem. It's a really high speed track, but like Sebastian Vettel said, it's kind of difficult to overtake because the exit of the corners are fast, so it's hard to build that momentum and get on the backside of the car in front of you and set up to do a heavy braking maneuver. Now, that's not to say that passing didn't happen because passing, you know, it did happen. But I was kind of interested to see what was going to happen in the race, as far as the passing went with the DRS zones and all that. And I was pleasantly surprised, especially with the lead cars there for a while, because we had some just absolutely titanic battles going on between Weber, Alonso, and Hamilton all at one point. I mean, the
Yeah,
battles.
there's a lot of, three and four cars nose tail fighting each other for positions. It was overall a good race. I enjoyed it.
And notice the one thing that we failed to mention was Sebastian Vettel, because he was a non-factor.
Yeah, for the most part, he kind of took himself out of contention. He slid off the track early on when he was fighting Alonso for position, and he lost a few spots and then came back on track and just went backwards all day. I think he went as far back as seventh, in normal running, and worked his way back up. But towards the end of the race, he was fighting with Felipe Massa for fourth, and Massa's pit crew stumbled. And yes, Mr. Vettel was able to get that spot.
Yes, there was a slight mistake. So Vettel fin the results after some kind of crazy pit stop strategy, because a lot of the teams were holding out and kept putting their guys on the super soft compounds, just kept doing it and doing it and doing it. And you know, basically the weather conditions were very you know, it was really cloudy for most of the race, and a lot of teams were expecting rain to
Yeah.
come at the end of the race, and it never came.
They started out with rain occurring very lightly, and everybody was on slicks, and there was a lot of talk about going to inners, and it never happened. And everybody still was thinking they were going to get rain at the end of the race, so nobody was putting on the hard tires until the very last stop. And then some people, were hurt by that, and they were hoping to get a little rain at the end of the race and then come in for enters instead of going to the hards, and it never materialized.
Yeah, I think like Vettel and Massa did their like final pit stop fight with
Yes, on
like
lap 59.
a lap to go, and we got dudes scrambling in the pits. So I was like, wow.
Yeah, and Massa should have had that spot. However, Ferrari is blaming it on a new wheel nut design. So.
Kind of like when they removed the Lollipop Man and had that weird iRobot looking thing come down and tell you to go. Blame that too.
It's a Roomba. A Roomba on a stick.
It's like, what the hell is that thing? It looks like a cyborg. Anyways, well, the race would have it, Lewis Hamilton and his whiny self and their very uncompetitive car would
his
finish.
Best race ever.
Oh, my God. I'm so sick of it. I'm just over this guy. All right. He can drive his tail off. I get it. I don't care. He's got a big mouth. I hate him. I hate him as a person. As a man, I hate him. And I can't stand the way he talks and what he says and how every damn thing is the best race of all time. I was so awesome. So satisfying. Dude, you won a race. Shut up. No. Just shut up. I feel
yeah,
better.
Yeah, well.
And anyway. And so Lewis Hamilton would take the win by about 3-4 seconds over Fernando Alonso, who finished second for Ferrari. So you say, where are the Red Bulls? Well, Mark Webber would finish on the third step of the podium, and Sebastian Vettel would not finish on the podium.
Huh?
I know. And it was complete chaos and madness, and I'm pretty sure that's what had led to some riots in Germany. Because people are like, what? So, again, Vettel chokes at the home race, to put it blunt. That reports and rumors and what will have you, they said that Vettel had went for the wet setup and looked to capitalize on the downforce. Unfortunately, seeing as though it never was wet, his setup choice was poor, and he paid dearly for it. And the people who hate him, or the haters of Vettel, will not let him live down the fact that he choked when Fernando Alonso was behind him and threw it away. When he spun out, he did that snap spin.
I don't think we can really say that his fortunes have changed, though. Seriously.
No. This means nothing. This is a speed bump.
You had a bad day, so what?
I know that Daniel Powder song. You had a bad day.
Yes, we need to play that for him. Send it to the team.
You had a good race and you threw it all away. That's why I don't do music.
Yes. But you know, in the end, it was a good race for Alonso, for Ferrari. They're looking better after winning the last one and then coming into this one and finishing second. They're certainly showing better form than they have of late. I think that part of this is down to Red Bull's gambling on wet weather setup.
Yes.
But then again, you know, not everybody can be pros at Bat Racer like you and I.
Oh, of course. We were awesome in the Red Bulls, weren't we?
We were.
We were amazing. We were fast in Red Bulls before Vettel was fast in Red Bulls.
That's right.
So, yeah. Well, you know, through this whole thing, through this whole devastation, if you will, Vettel only lost 3 points in the championship. He went from like 80 points to 77 point deficit.
Wow.
Over his teammate, Mark Webber.
Yes, because his teammate finished third. Mm-hmm. Lewis Hamilton won, which really doesn't... Yeah, so what?
Doesn't really do much for him because he was so far down after everything went wrong.
Yeah.
So if you really want to talk about, you know, he's still clear 80 points over the next guy who is legitimately going to challenge him.
Yeah.
Because you know Red Bull's not going to let Webber challenge him.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, Hamilton does have the capability of pushing, but I think at this point it's really down to Constructors' Championship. McLaren has the possibility of catching them for the Constructors' Championship because they have two strong drivers.
Mm-hmm.
Ferrari has no chance of catching even McLaren for the Constructors' Championship because Felipe, you know.
I mess up.
Picking, yeah. Mess up massa. Anyway.
Well, yeah, the Constructors' Championship lead is 112 points over Mercedes, McLaren-Mercedes, that is, not my Mercedes, who are just awful. If you want to do the math, they are actually 277 points out. I think they're nearly mathematically eliminated.
They're better than Renault.
Oh, yeah, they are. They're better than Renault. They're better than Sauber. Better than Force India. Toro Rosso and Williams, and that's as far as we go because no other team scored anything.
Crazy. Ah, well. So, yeah, that's the F1 German Grand Prix. We have more things to talk about in F1. We'll briefly go through them. There have been some tests of late. The FIA Institute has recently carried out a bunch of tests in which they're firing F1 wheels out of cannons at canopies.
Dude, how cool would it be to be there and have that job?
They're firing an F1 wheel out of a jet fighter cannon. At 140 miles an hour, this wheel is impacting with these canopy materials that they're at least testing to see if it's feasible to enclose the cockpit in some way.
Bad idea.
I can't help but think that because you still have to extract the driver in the case of an accident.
Oh, yeah.
And I don't know. I mean, is this too much of an overreaction to some, you know, two very wild freak accidents that happened last year?
I think so. I think that Formula One cars were built to be open cockpit cars, and I think covering them is a mistake. It takes away more from Formula One than it does when you start talking about, well, the engines aren't going to sound the same and the fans aren't going to want to watch. No. I'm not going to watch if you put a dumb little canopy over the thing.
I think they'll end up with kind of the same idea that IndyCar did, you know, when they're looking at the possibility of going to the Schlong Racer. The Delta Wing was so radically different than any open wheel chassis had ever been before. Open cockpit, open wheel cars do not look like that.
No.
And while it was a novel and neat idea, and I liked it because it would push some sort of innovation in the sport, in the end, it wasn't chosen because it was so huge of a departure and the fan base couldn't identify with that car. Well, is this, in my mind, I think putting a cockpit on an F1 car is too much of a departure. A couple other things they're talking about was putting kind of like a half visor around the front of the car, kind of like you have on motorcycle windshields or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
Or another idea was to kind of, a la sprint car, put kind of like a roll cage around the driver. Not sure what they're going to end up with or if anything changes at all. But it's just kind of cool to think of firing a tire out of a jet fighter cannon.
Pull!
Clung! Cool stuff. So, yeah, something going on. But things that have been going on in F1, it's getting a little crazy.
Mm-hmm. And
Go ahead.
No, you go ahead.
I was going to say, we didn't follow this too closely because up to this point, nothing's really happened. A German baker, Gerhard Gribkowski, sorry about that. He was involved with the sale of F1 to from CVC to good grief, who was the previous owner? Anyway, he was involved in the sale of F1 to CVC.
Mm-hmm.
And the problem is it was sold from a bank, Baron LB, which is partially owned by the German government. The problem is that he's being charged with breach of trust, tax evasion, and receipt of corrupt payments.
Oh, Lord.
Because supposedly he got $44 million as a kickback from the sale of F1. This money came from someone, an individual known as, and these are court documents, an individual known as Bernard E.
Hmm.
So it's an interesting story that's going on here. Basically, they're alleging that this guy sold F1 for a lower price than it should have been sold to CVC.
Hmm.
And then got a kickback payment from Bernie Ecclestone. Basically, this kickback was to pay him off for keeping the sale price low. Mm-hmm. That's the basis of the case. And because of that, you know, this money should have been money that the German government would have realized from the sale of F1. And then he didn't pay taxes on it, and breach of trust, and payments, and all this kind of stuff. The interesting part of the situation is Bernie Ecclestone has went in and talked to these prosecutors. He hasn't had any charges filed against him. He's saying that he's innocent, that he was actually paying this Grabkowski guy a bribe. He was being blackmailed by this Grabkowski guy.
Mm-hmm.
And Grabkowski was saying he was going to go and blow the whistle and say that this whole process was corrupt or whatever. And he didn't have any again, this is Bernie Ecclestone's statement. This Grabkowski guy didn't have any reason to say that it was corrupt, but just the allegation that this whole process was corrupt would have cost Bernie billions of dollars or something like that. So he was willing to pay $44 million as a blackmail payment to this guy. Okay. No. The first thing I'm going to say is, regardless of Mr. Grabkowski and how his court case goes, this is bad for F1, because the idea that Bernie Ecclestone could be blackmailed is anathema to every understanding we have of this guy. So, don't know where this is going to go, and we're all going to watch very closely, because this could be very bad for at least Bernie Ecclestone's future involvement in F1.
Which is fine with me. Bye-bye, troll.
Yeah, indeed. I think a lot of people will have that opinion as well. But then again, when you create a power vacuum, what's going to come in its place? And we just have to be very careful, because we've created a power vacuum in the FIA. Jean Todt is now in place, and there are some funky new rules that are coming out, and not everybody's too happy with them.
Yes. Well, we've talked about the new engines and some new regulations that have come about that sees to it that on pit road, you will be using electricity only, so you'll be like a golf cart.
Yes.
And then obviously the new engines, the whole lot like that, and the teams are a little upset about this.
I mean, the teams agreed to the new engines.
Yes.
The 1.6 liter V6s, and the teams basically agreed to the 15,000 RPM limit. They agreed to increase the power from the KERS. We've known about that for a while, that it was increasing from 60 kilowatts to 120 kilowatts. Not really until now have we heard for sure that it's going to be energy recovery from exhaust gas heat as well as from the braking that we're in use today. But now we're hearing about new technical regulations that say, well, the car has to be fully under electric power when it's in the pits. It also will have an eighth gear and some other interesting fuel flow restrictions and other things like that. The width of the front wing shall be 150 millimeters narrower than the current ones. Also, several new regulation tweaks tidy up the appearance of the car's bodywork, getting rid of flip-ups and all that kind of stuff. They're also obviously getting rid of off throttle blown diffuser action and all of that. Mm-hmm. All of those things, though, had not been agreed upon by the Formula One technical working group.
Oh boy.
And now, you know, it's just kind of interesting, because this whole process has taken place. The FIA published the technical regulations, and the teams immediately started seeking clarification on these 2014 regulations, because the technical working group was not consulted, and the F1 commission was not consulted before this stuff went out. Now, the FIA has the right to do this kind of stuff, but the reason these groups were set up was to have buy-in from the teams on the rules. And if you're not going to actually go to the teams for that buy-in, then what purpose do these organizations have?
Yeah. That.
Yeah. So Eric Bouillet, who is the current vice chairman of FOTA, we were a bit concerned that some rules have been published without being discussed with the F1 technical working group. Yeah, whatever. That's great. We understand, though. This is kind of where we start to see once again the whole Jean Todt FIA, you know, he's had some good things that he's done, but we're starting to see a few rough spots, and this is one of them, where the teams are starting to feel a little bit annoyed. Bernie's feeling a big bit annoyed now, going out and saying that all the tracks are going to go to IndyCar. Okay.
Lord.
So, yeah, it is the world of F1, and these are the funny little stories they tell.
Interesting. Well, a familiar name over at Ferrari is now completely out the door. Aldo Costa is left the team. Mike,
yeah.
You want to elaborate on that?
Yeah, I remember a few months back, they moved him laterally within the organization, that he was going to move from the Ferrari race team and move into car development or something like that. And today it was officially confirmed that, or recently it was officially confirmed that he's been moved off the premises. And I don't think anybody's surprised by that. You know, Ferrari wants to make as little noise as they can. So when they fire a technical director, they move him laterally, and then, you know, once nobody's looking, they just off.
That's what the Italians do.
Exactly.
Cue the Godfather music. you'll come this way. Okay.
And dancing at the end of a piano string.
Oh my, that's disturbing. All right. Well, is that all we have for Formula One?
That's all we have for Formula One.
Well, we're on to the last section, because I'm gonna tell Doug that he needs to cover Mazda Road Indy next week, because I was confused by it. I didn't watch any of it. I can't speak educationally about it. I'm not going to do a disservice to our fans and sound like an idiot trying to explain it. So, Doug, I know you're listening to this. Next week when you come back, you're doing Mazda Road Indy, because you're better at it than me.
Sweet.
So, yes. But we will talk about IndyCar. And we are going to talk about Edmonton. We've finally come off of Toronto, and, you know, we were expecting a madness-filled race. A lot of drivers upset with each other, yet even still, once they got to Edmonton. So that was good, because we still had some, you know, fired-up guys ready to compete. And we also had a new track layout. And before we get into what happened on the race, I'm going to tell you, actually watching the race, that new layout is awesome. I do like it.
I comparing it with the previous layout, it is much, much better. It is much more interesting to watch. I mean, you remember a couple of years ago, we had a race there, no cautions, no nothing. It was just, and I think the leaders finished like 1, 2, 3, 4 from the start. I mean, it was just a terrible, terrible race. So this is a huge improvement. I would definitely agree with you.
Excuse me, I'm sorry. I was in the yawn. Well, the way to go. I'm not bored, and I am paying attention, but it is hot outside, and I'm tired. I ran around this weekend carrying luggage for very important people.
Ah, so, how fun.
Yes, not at all. But that does lend itself to a Friday comp day. So,
nice.
3-day weekend. All right, so let's look at it. Let's look at it from qualifications right away. And we finally had the streak broken. Willpower, very, very, very successful on the road and street courses. Had actually taken the last 8 pole positions on road and street courses. And this time he was upstaged by Mr. Takuma Sato.
Wow.
Yeah. Again, I've been vindicated because, I mean, he took a KV car out onto a road course, and he put it on pole position.
Seriously, I mean, he's been on pole position on an oval. Now he's on pole position on a road course. What's going on?
And this isn't, you know, Tony Kanaan is not typically known as, like, a fantastic, like, road racer. He's good, but he does really well on the ovals.
Yeah.
He's not what we call a super successful road racer, all things considered, his in previous lives for him. But he is good enough. But man, Sato and Viso. Whew, Sato putting it on P1 and Viso going to P5. So two cars in the Firestone Fast 6, none of which were TK. And I mean, I think that package with at least Sato, I know that he's had some hard times closing out the races, but we are clearly seeing Sato improve as a driver in the series.
Clearly. Yeah, I would definitely agree with it. He's getting more used to the cars, and unfortunately, a lot of the things that are happening to him this year are happening not by his control.
Yeah, especially at this race, which we'll get to, because I was very perturbed. But Will Power would put it P2, Scott Dixon P3, Franchitti P4, Viso 5, and Ryan Briscoe putting it at P6. So I think he may feel as though the heat is on. And he needs to start producing results like yesterday. So, but overall, the field was tightly packed for the most part. Let's see, notables, Hinchcliffe, P10, that was a good run for him in qualifying, or, decent run for him in qualifying, much better than his rookie counterpart in the battle, Mr. J.R. Hildebrand. That wouldn't necessarily stay 100% the way it was, but Paul Tracy, 25th, to show that the Dragon car is hopeless. It was just it was kind of surprising to see Mike Conway all the way back in 20th. The guy, he's been a pretty good road racer this year, and 20th, he's really lost his mojo after not qualifying for the Indy 500. That's all there is to it.
Yeah, well, Hunter Ray, though, qualified 7th, and you'd think that those two would be fairly close to each other.
Yeah, I think I'm not exactly 100% certain what's going on in Conway's camp, but things are bad. Things are going really badly right now for him.
Yes, indeed.
Marco Andretti as well, 19th. Pathetic run for him. But he's not really a road racing ace, if you will, so... can't really expect it, but all in all, qualifying was good. The Firestone Fast 6 were very fun to watch. A little bit of excitement to see if, because Sato, when he set pole, Will Power was, after the pole position time was set, Power was on a flyer. He missed it just on that next to last lap, but still had one more lap to go before we were, before we moved on. And we're done with qualifying, so we were all kind of watching Will Power to see exactly what was going to happen, if he was going to have enough to put him on or put him off pole. But I think the scuffed Firestone Reds that they picked didn't work out as well as what they were hoping for. And Sato, Sato put it up in P1 on a fresh set, so well done for the boy Sato. He's riding that Japan World Cup momentum is what he's doing.
Oh, there you go. The only other note from qualifying that I had was I don't know if it was new this week. It's the first time I've seen it. The telemetry display that they had during qualifying with the little colored boxes up at the top of the screen to indicate the driver's position in the current session.
Yeah, not bad.
Those were very good. They not only indicated their position in the current session, they indicated whether they are on track or not, whether they're in the fast six or they were above the cutoff line or not. They also indicated their relative speed with respect to the current leader. Mm-hmm. And I thought it was fantastic.
No, very good indeed.
Brilliant, as Doug would say.
Yeah, brilliant. So we move into the race, and we're expecting a drama-filled crash fest, and it almost seemed like it was going to start that way, but it didn't go that long. Lap one, we had Alex Tagliani make a move, a very Marco-esque move, St. Pete reference there, but he came down to the inside, put it real wide, going into that, it wasn't the first corner.
It's turn five.
Yeah, turn five there. And spears Ray Hall. Ray Hall doesn't spin when he gets hit initially. Tagliani's carbon fiber goes all over the place, looking like a frag grenade went off. Graham Ray Hall then had a cut tire. He went off into the grass, lost control, and Paul Tracy absolutely annihilated the side of his car on Graham Ray Hall's car.
Yeah.
Therefore, ending it.
I'm sure, Tracy wouldn't admit to it, but he was probably pretty happy that he didn't have to finish the rest of the race in that piece of junk car.
Yeah, he's like, he sounded disappointed because they had done some great work for the charity causes there in Canada, only for it to fall short. But again, the car was not competitive at all, to be honest. So it looked like on the first lap we were gonna have another crash fest. Tagliani, I do believe he was he penalized? Yeah, he was
Yeah.
penalized. Yeah.
He got a drive through, and this was after his car was stalled on track. So immediately I was like, wait a second, he was stalled on track. It was kind of a new precedent in my mind. Maybe it was a makeup call for last week's lack of, the swallowing of the whistle that they did at Toronto or whatever. But they decided that they're going to start this race out. They were going to give him a penalty right away. Even though he had stalled on track and, he had already done the time serve that IndyCar seems to be thinking is a good way of penalizing people, by not penalizing them when they screw up somebody else's race. So anyway, they went ahead and gave him a drive-through on top of him stopping to have them play around with the wing and everything like that. So it was kind of interesting for Tags. He was able to recover from it, but bit of a mess.
Sato would continue to lead the race for the first 20 laps. However, he would make a slight mistake, pushing a little hard, trying to stay ahead of Power. And at the time, I believe it was Dixon,
Yeah,
trying to stay
Powell
ahead of.
Dixon, Franchitti.
He locked up going into turn 13. Power locked up as well, trying to, it looked like, outbrake into turn 13. Both of them went wide. Dixon went to make a move, but Power was able to recover and move into the lead. Sato would drop to P3. Slight mistake, but not a big one. I mean, he's still in contention. So Power would then assume the lead. And then lap 24, we're starting to get into the full or into the green flag pit stops. And then it happens. Oriel Servia made a pit stop, green flag stop, and came out just in time to be punted by Mike Conway into the turn 12 wall, therefore pretty much ending any chance that Servia had. And that was really odd too, because Servia got out of the tires, and you're like, oh, looks like he's going to carry on. And then the rear wing just falls off. You're like, oh, fail.
And that really sucks for Servia. I mean, seriously, the guy has been putting up good points. He is in contention to be in the top three, four, at the end of the season, which is a huge accomplishment for that team.
Oh, yeah.
So that really hurts. It really hurts.
James Hinchcliffe would stall. Because he was trying not to hit Danica Patrick. He knows that Danica Patrick has a reputation of punching people,
Yeah, there you go.
and so he tries to avoid the contact and prevent himself from punting her. And
Everything was backing up in turn
yeah,
13 as everybody was going through on yellow, and he just had to slam on the brakes, so.
yep, and stalled it out. Stunk for Hinchcliffe, but he was able to get it back going at least. After they took their sweet time to go out there and fire him up.
Yeah. Conway also got a drive through from this whole calamity that caused this yellow. But, under the rules, he'd have to serve it after the race went green.
Fair
So,
enough, fair enough.
good that Conway got a penalty. Again, up to this point, I'm pretty happy with the way they're calling it.
Oh yeah, me too. I'm very happy. And the punting is not as bad at this point.
Yeah.
Because you're
Well, Toronto, man, it's the street canyons. It's the concrete walls on either side. At Edmonton, you had some concrete here and there, but the majority of the track was wide open. And it makes for a better race when you don't have concrete, encroaching upon the track.
Well, we go back green on lap 30, just in time for EJ Viso, who was having a good run, to ruin it by spearing probably the person you don't want to spear, Scott Dixon. Dixon would have to come off, busted radiator. Fluid was actually spilling into the cockpit, and he said that he was that his backside was literally on fire. So they had to stop, kill the engine. That was it for Dixon. He would try to actually, it was interesting because when he went to come back out on course, he said, "I want to make sure Viso's out there. I'm coming out there to take him out," is
Well,
exactly what he said.
when he was coming in, he said that.
Yeah.
And after the race, they asked him about it. He's like, "Yeah, I was said in a little bit of haste. I wasn't going to do that, but I was pretty upset.
Yeah.
In his even-keeled, you know, way that he is, so.
Yeah, Vizo then pits to repair the wing damage after being stalled, mind you. Yeah. Beatrice as well at this point has some in-plate damage on the nose that actually, I think, sat out on the track for the rest of the race.
Yeah.
And so we had Vizo restarting, and the thing was is that Vizo didn't get a penalty because he had to stop and repair damage, which, like you said, was a reverse call, if you will, on what happened to Tagliani on the first lap when he punted Rahal.
Yeah, IndyCar tried to explain this away by saying that Vizo had went down two laps because he had to be restarted, and then they had to come in and work on his car, and by the time they got him back out, he was two laps down. I don't care. I'm glad that you set this new precedence with Tagliani at the beginning of the race. I wish that you'd just continue it. Don't just sit there and say, well, he doesn't deserve a penalty because he took somebody out of the race and he went two laps down. The first part is more important than the second part. Yeah. Make sure you penalize somebody when they do something wrong. Doesn't matter if, you know, he damages his car and has to pit or blows up the car and is out of the race. You at least make a note of it in the race results, you know, penalty or what have you. I mean, I'm tired of having IndyCar just basically sit there and act like nothing's wrong.
Mm-hmm. Well, after all that calamity was done, and I do agree with you, I think if somebody punts somebody, lap penalty. Not even stop and go, lap penalty. Because we would have a move where Ryan Hunter-Reay on lap 39 would try to overtake Takuma Sato for second place, and Hunter-Reay spears Sato out of nowhere.
Oh, yeah.
Sato.
Listening to the TV broadcast and then later going back and listening to the radio broadcast and how they discussed it there, they saw it. They saw what was going to happen. Hunter-Reay was there, and he was like, oh, no, don't do it. Don't do it. Oh!
Yeah, exactly. Too late. And he spins Sato. There's a local yellow, not a full course. Sato then goes a lap down, and then RHR goes back in for his drive through and comes right back out. He's not a lap down.
I don't like that.
I'm of the
opinion that the way you penalize somebody for taking somebody out is you put them immediately behind that person on the track.
Yeah, hold them.
Or immediately in front of that person on the track, however you want to do it.
or just penalize them a lap.
Yeah.
I mean, put them down a lap.
It's frustrating and. We'll get into this after the discussion, but it's because of IndyCar's crappy overtaking rule that this kind of stuff happens. Because Sato had to go to the outside, and he left himself wide open for Hunter-Reay to dive bomb him on the inside and clip him off the track.
Oh, and did he?
and it's because of IndyCar's overtaking rule, their stupid leave the inside lane open rule, that this happened.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm tired of seeing it at this point.
Yeah. Well, that would bring us pretty much uneventful for the rest of the time, and we would go lap 79, where Ryan Briscoe would then have to pit from fourth place for gas on a missed gas call. He was rather miffed about that. And
Tagliani missed on that one as well, but Briscoe ended up coming in on lap 79.
Yeah.
Crazy.
Really bad. He was really mad about it. But again, it just shows the level of mediocrity at Penske for the last couple of years. I mean, it's just they're shooting themselves in the face with these things.
Yeah, you know, I don't know exactly how that comes out, but Briscoe was on. They intentionally pulled Briscoe off the track and put him on a different pit strategy with the hope that they would, you know, they're basically playing it. If they got a yellow, Briscoe was going to win the race.
Negative Ghost Rider.
It didn't happen. but if they got a yellow, you know, Will Power may not have won the race. So. Yeah. I understand what Roger was doing there, and it's not a matter of Briscoe failing.
No, not point. This time.
And I don't know. it was definitely interesting to see the strategies play out towards the end of the race, but I would have to say pretty impressive that they went this entire race distance and had as much contact as they did have, and they only had two cautions, two mm-hmm. full course cautions. The rest of them were taken care of by the safety crew. They got them back underway and got the track cleaned up while action was going on. And you can't ask for more. You really can't with IndyCar racing the way it is and the level of safety that they actually try to have on their race weekends, not just, oh, the car's dead on track, let's call a local. No, when the car's dead on track, you typically shut down the entire track.
Mm-hmm.
So pretty cool.
Well, the race would finish on lap 80. Will Power would take the win. He would be followed by a very quiet Helio Castroneves. So good run for Castroneves after the year he's had.
A very quiet Helio Castroneves who did not want to punt Will Power out of his current position.
Yeah. He did a good job holding up Dario Franchitti. Dario didn't have enough to get around Helio, so he takes the final step of the podium. TK fourth, and Justin Wilson in the Giant Reinbold Racing car, a nice, very nice, and very respectable fifth place, as well as Sebastian Bourdais, Boy Scouts of America in the Dale Coyne car, puts it P6.
Yeah, it's very nice. I mean, especially for Sebastian Bourdais, that may be the first time anybody's heard his name all season.
Yeah. It's been that kind of a return.
Yeah, poor guy. He's driving for Dale Coyne, though.
Yeah.
Seriously, what did he expect?
Three retirements. Simone Di Silvestro would retire on lap 54 with mechanical failure. Graham Rahal would retire, obviously, from the contact, and Paul Tracy as well from the contact early. So, but overall, I'm gonna give it a B+, because I thought the new track layout was awesome. I thought the racing was good. The punting was to a minimum. And the only thing that I would say that, you know, drug this race down was a couple of, like you said, the inconsistencies that kind of happened at the end from race control. Now, I'm not banging race control saying, you guys suck. You guys messed the whole thing up. That's not
like we did for Toronto.
No. I'm just saying, you know, if you're going to hit tags after he's already stopped, you need to hit everybody. And I think that we need to go to a lap penalty. I think it's just not right when Sato gets dive bombed by Hunter Rey, who, oh, by the way, that very previous day was complaining about Servia blocking it and qualifying, saying it wasn't the professional thing to do. And yet here comes RHR power bombing Sato and punting him, sending him a lap down. That's not right that he finishes seventh and Sato gets no such luck. This was a prime time for Sato to shine, and he got it pretty much taken away from him by a really stupid move, to be honest. So,
pretty sad.
I don't know.
That was going to be a good result for Sato.
Oh, it was. But coming off of this race, regardless of what you thought of it, we didn't have any poor winners. We didn't have any really any poor losers per se, except for Briscoe, again, was very peeved that he had to do the pit stop on the last lap. But, you know, that is racing, and that's what happens. But looking even further, the versus ratings showed a 25% increase over the 2010 season. 25% there, Mike.
The overnight was a 0.4. The final was a 0.6.
does that happen?
Not for versus, it doesn't happen. Nope. That is impressive. I don't know what you chalk it up to, but certainly it would appear that, you know, as we talked about a few weeks ago when we were bemoaning the Milwaukee race, it certainly appears that these oval races people pay passing interest to, but when you get to a road street course, people show up and watch.
And again, it's much more economic, because you can camp out at places like that.
Yeah.
It's more exciting, in my opinion, because you go left and right. And, you know, it's just – I'm going to chalk it up until the day I die or until something else changes otherwise, that the culture of motorsport in the United States is changing. And we like our ovals, but we are really starting to hang on to these road and street courses. We like to watch the road and street courses. And yeah, I think there's a change. I honestly do. I think the climate is changing for motorsport here.
I think you may be right. I think that I think people are starting to come back around to what they didn't pay much attention to. And it may just be malaise. I mean, people have just gotten sick of seeing people turn left.
Yeah. I mean, it's just lame. I mean, it's fun. It's fun when you're doing like 200 miles an hour and you got wheel to wheel racing. It's exciting. It's very exciting. But it just doesn't change. It's two hours of the same thing, whereas at least here you could be watching Will Power and Dario Franchitti fight for the lead through, you know, at Mid-Ohio. You can watch them go down through there, through the real hilly terrain area, and then all of a sudden you flash back to the front part of the course where they're going into that high-speed turn one and then heading in down that straightaway. It's not always, okay, I'm looking at cars that are going left. We're going to focus on another battle. Hey, look, they're still going left. I mean, there's just different aspects of it that make it more entertaining, I think, because you're not seeing the same thing all the time.
Yeah, I'm not going to go that far. I do find road and street courses entertaining. I do find ovals entertaining as well. I'm still going to give the nod to the ovals because that's my bread and butter. Yep. But I do think that there's just a malaise. People are you know, they've been NASCAR'd out and they're flipping through the channels and they see something completely different.
Mm-hmm.
And they might stop and watch, or they might go to a race that they wouldn't otherwise. So
needless to say, Mike has won the AJ Foyt trophy, and I will take the Michael or the Mario Andretti trophy and set it on the mantle.
I can see the Michael Andretti trophy given out as well. The trophy given to the person who never wins Indy.
Oh, the Michael Andretti trophy. Oh, that's a low blow, but I like it. It'll be interesting to see what the ratings are for Mid-Ohio, though, because Canada or the Edmonton race did not have the same things that people probably tuned in, or same reasons why people tuned in. That being, we didn't have a crash fest, we didn't have a demo derby, nobody's talking trash to each other, and everybody seems to be back on, you know, speaking terms, especially Will Power and Dario Franchitti. And it's going to be one of those things. It's going to be Mid-Ohio is going to be a telling race. The results for Mid-Ohio will be telling.
Yeah, I'm kind of interested in a couple of things that you know, the Tour de France has been going on, and that's been drawing people's eyes to Versus, which normally, you know, is not the station you're going to go to for certain things. But, mm-hmm. you know, since the Tour has been so ubiquitous on Versus the last couple of weeks, people are more likely to flip it there and see what's on. That may be kind of shown in the fact that the ratings increased through both the Edmonton and the Toronto race,
mm-hmm.
Instead of decreasing, which seems to be the normal trend. The other thing that really does have to be talked about is these Canadian races. They have crazy fans. I mean, these people just show up in droves. They come out and watch these races. The television ratings in Canada were far better than they were in the States. Don't have Nielsen rating numbers, but they're talking about 1.5 million viewers on television on TSN. For the Toronto race. I haven't heard for Edmonton, but I assume it's the same or better. Canadians love motorsport, and if we can get another race in Canada, we should. Preferably,
I agree.
Montreal.
Oh, Montreal would be awesome. That'd be awesome. No arguments out of me for that one. None whatsoever.
I mean, couldn't you see EJ Viso spearing somebody into the lake?
Oh,
a river, excuse me.
That hairpin just introduces all kinds of nasty little punts. But all right, well, let's see what else. We're just about ready to wrap it up, I do believe. But we do have one more thing to discuss.
Before we do that, let's talk about Edmonton a little bit more.
Okay.
The future of Edmonton, and this is I don't know, man. This is a curious thing. It came out over the weekend that the course, the entire airport, is scheduled for redevelopment in 2 more years. So we have 2 more years of IndyCar racing on the current course. And after that, they're going to develop it, and you will not have that airport down there. So they'll have to either cancel the race or move it to some other location in the city. I'm a little bit surprised by that and a little bit annoyed. Number one, the big reason they said that they couldn't do the race on the previous track was that they need to keep an airport or an airstrip open during the race. Or during the weekend, during the race, whatever. They announced on Versus that the entire airport was shut down during the weekend for the race. I don't know if that was just a passing comment that was said incorrectly or what, but if that's the case, then they failed. They forced these people to come out and spend an extra $1 million to pave the new tarmac and pit paddock complex and everything like that. And they didn't need to because the previous course layout would have worked just fine if they were going to shut down the airport anyway. So I think it still goes back to the fact that Edmonton signed a contract and then said, oh, by the way, we want out of this contract, so we're going to make these crazy stipulations, and the entire city just blew up and forced them to do it anyway.
Nah.
I don't know. That was just a mess going into this year, and I'm glad that they were able to get the event turned around and actually get it to happen. It showed well on television. It's going to grow for next year. Yeah, they were down on stands this area. They said Kurt Cavan went through and counted the seats, and he said it like 15, 17,000 seats. I can't remember.
Jeez.
So the event attendance probably was somewhere on the in the order of 25 to 30,000, which doesn't look good on an oval because you've got 150,000 seats due to NASCAR inflation.
Mm-hmm.
But it works just fine for a road street course because the event was right sized for that crowd. So anyway, yeah, let's move on.
No, you're fine. Well, all we have left is the Lotus deal. Do you want to kind of cue us in? Is there anything coming out on the Lotus front?
It, not a whole lot other than, you know, I heard you guys talk about it last week, and I thought we could discuss it a little bit more. Article in the Indianapolis Star just yesterday talked about Lotus being quiet about what they're doing, signing teams for 2012. They haven't really talked with anybody specifically about giving them, you know, this whole, you know, Lotus anchor team arrangement or anything like that. KV has talked to them, but they're not interested because what Lotus is saying they want to do is actually buy a team. And yeah, Jimmy Vassar is not interested in selling.
That's interesting.
Yeah, so I'm curious about what's going on with that. Supposedly we're gonna have a Honda engine strapped into a car towards the end of this month. They've already fired up the Honda engine. Chevy will be firing up sometime late this month, early next month, and Lotus is probably a few weeks after that when they'll actually fire up the engine for the first time. They're in process of strapping the Honda engine into a car, and they're going to start testing it end of next month. So we're getting to the point where we're going to see these cars moving on track. I don't know. I think it's pretty important to start seeing these teams get signed and prepared for this. And at this point, all we know are three teams. We know where Foyt's going. We know where Ganassi's going. We know where Penske's going. Mm-hmm. We can make guesses on the other, but really we have no idea where KV's going to go. It doesn't sound like KV's going to be with Lotus.
Yeah, that was interesting. That was an interesting bit.
Newman Haas, not sure. I mean, Newman Haas may end up being the Lotus flagship team. It may end up with Chevy. It may end up, you know, we don't know. And at this point, you know, those are, you know, operative teams, Andretti, KV and Newman Haas. I would think that those are the three left that Lotus should be courting.
And I don't think it's going to work out for Andretti, to be honest.
Yeah. I would be surprised if Andretti went with Lotus.
Yeah.
I, it's, I, it, yeah.
I put all my bets on the Honda engine for Andretti.
And that makes the most sense due to their past relationship and everything. We shall see.
We shall. It'll be very interesting to see how everything unfolds, and keep it over at the paddock. We're monitoring. We're always vigilant. So, yeah. Well, you know, it's only 9:30, and I don't know what the hell to do now. I don't think we've ever had a show this short.
This is amazing.
This is. Doug, you're fired. No, I'm just...
We're all... Couldn't go through the evening without throwing somebody under the bus.
I already fired you, so who else am I going to fire?
Okay, fine.
So you were fired for being a troll, what we like to call a numpty, for putting Hockenheim down. And now Doug's fired because the shows went too short. Therefore, I fulfilled my firing quota for the day, and everybody's happy. Yay! So, you know, it happens.
Yeah, well.
But, all right, well, thanks everybody for listening. Be sure to check us out, openpaddock.net. You can find us on iTunes. You can rate us on iTunes. You can also check us out on the Facebook, facebook.com/openpaddock. And also, you know, just like us there, and you can actually have your the stories put right to your Facebook desktop. Also, twitter.com/openpaddock. Join us there. Sometimes there's talk during the races or silly talk afterwards, but for the most part, it will be the place that you want to go to have the stories fed to you if you are a Twitter-holic like me. So I've got issues with Twitter. I can't put it down. I can't put it down, man. So I got to tweet everything. So... but yeah, hit us up there, and we'll see you there. So, I'm really lost. I don't know what to do. We're out of time.
Good night.
Yeah, good night, everybody. Thanks for listening. See you next week.